and justice for all.
Our discussionary items, I will turn that over to you, Mr. Shaw.
Wonderful. So I'm going to ask us to jump right down to number two first, Family Medical Center MOU. And that's because we have Travis with us tonight, and so we want to kind of dive into this first. So that way he can then go ahead and get on out of here. Mm-hmm. Last week, Family Medical Center did a presentation with the high school with Steve Polizzi, myself, and David. We've had Family Medical Center in at Monroe Middle School. We've had them at Orchard and along with Arborwood and Waterloo. And so what we uncovered last week was that each building has its own MOU. And so we looked at it and said, well, that's kind of getting to be a little ridiculous. Why we have one for each building? Why shouldn't we just have one MOU for the whole district so that that way Family Medical Center could provide services at any of our buildings as needed? It's been a very successful program. And so I'd like to have you, Travis, talk a little bit about what that program is and how it's been working at these other four buildings and what you see happening here at the high school.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me tonight. So Family Medical Centers have been working with Monroe Public Schools for, I think this is our fourth year currently that we're in right now. So we provide behavioral health therapists and we house them directly in the schools. So it's a social worker, it's a master's level social worker, master's level counselor typically. They work right in the schools and provide therapist support for students for really whatever their needs are. Obviously a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression, just sort of, you know, life transition issues, grief issues, struggles in classes, maybe struggles at home. Really doesn't matter what it is, you know, if they could benefit from some short or long-term counseling, that's what that person is there for. You know, school resources are stretched thin. School social workers have all kinds of other things that they have to do. They don't have time to really do the counseling and therapy with students. And so we're just kind of coming in to try to fill those gaps. There's no cost to the school district at all. We fund it by billing insurances, whatever the insurance is for the family. We don't turn any students away if they don't have insurance, if they're underinsured. We have sliding fee scales. If parents don't pay bills, we continue to see students. We don't not see them due to non-payment issues or anything like that. We're able to do that because we're a federally qualified health center, so we do get some grant dollars from the federal government, which helps us provide those services for families who aren't able to afford it. So, like I said, we've been with Monroe for a few years now, and it's been a great relationship. Actually, we serve more students for Monroe Public Schools, so we're in 9 different school districts in 3 counties. We're in over 50 schools right now. We serve more students in Monroe Public Schools than we do in any of our other locations.
And so for our school, students and schools, it's a beautiful resource to have. And they work, again, right inside our own buildings. And so what we brought forward tonight is just moving us to one MOU. That's really what this is about. And so I tried to, we showed you what the new MOU would look like in comparison to one that you saw from Waterloo. And then the original that came out from the middle school. And so how it's, the MOUs have changed over time right there. And so with that, I want to open up to any of our board members for questions you might have for Travis or on the MOU.
I do. I got a few questions. I have to tell you honestly, I didn't know anything about your organization, so I did a little research to look to kind of understand a little bit about organization. So I found 2 different locations. So I wasn't sure which one was you. One was on 901 North Macomb, and one was 1085.
Yep. So it's our site here in Monroe is the North Macomb one. We actually have 4 clinic sites.
In Monroe?
Not in Monroe, just the one in Monroe on North Macomb.
Which one is it, 901 or 1085? Because there was 2 listed, and I was trying to fit. One was listed as an urgent, and then the other one, it looked more of an office, so I wasn't sure.
901 is the correct address. I think in the 1001 one is a previous, I've only been here for about 18 months. That was previous
okay.
time here, so I'm not sure if that was just a previous location, or I don't know what that was.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, there did used to be a location down the street.
I'm sorry.
There was a different location down McCombs Street. I think Dr. Kabir's office moved into that building that the Family Medical Center used to be in.
Oh, it just showed today, because I looked up today. I'm not that proactive. And those were the two I found. It was 901 North Macomb and 1085. So I was just clarifying which one of those was yours. So I looked, and here's what I found. You correct me if I'm wrong. It was established in 1979. And it said on the website it serves over 19,000 patients and annually over 70,000. Is that kind of correct?
70,000 encounters.
And then it said there were four sites and 17 school board clinics. So is it kind of accurate? 17 school-based clinics, I'm sorry.
There are four sites, and we have over 50 sites now.
Oh, that's, someone needs to update the website.
Yep.
Okay. It listed out that there are 15 primary care providers, four part-time OBs, but it listed, I can go down through the list, only two psychiatric nurse practitioners and one psychiatrist. Is that the service? Is that what? Okay.
That's correct. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact number of primary.
Yeah, I'm just pulling this off, yep. And you're a patient-centered medical home model, your JCO accreditation, and all of those kind of things, right? So that it sounds like the information I've got is accurate, right? Yep. So what I'm looking at is you're providing behavioral self-help services within the schools. I'm looking at why not the community? Like, and then I'm looking at the needs of the students, and we have how many, over 4,000 students, and I don't know what population need these services, but it sounds like one psychiatrist may be difficult to accommodate this big need.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm just not sure. I didn't see any data of all your successes. I haven't seen how the last four years, how many students you've, I don't have any of that.
Yeah, so we do office-based behavioral health as well. So students, parents, whatever, can come to one of our sites, and we have therapists who work on-site as well. We put therapists in the schools for really convenience reasons. We found out, and research has demonstrated, that students and families access it more if it's easy. Students don't have to leave the school, get pulled out of school. Parents don't have to leave work to get the services. Our therapists will pull them directly from the class, and they try to, we've got a whole setup of, they don't pull them from the same class all of the time. We try not to pull them from core classes. So we really try to make sure, we're cognizant of when we're pulling them and how often we're pulling them to receive the services. But we're typically pulling them for about a half hour, and then they're right back in the class.
Okay.
So it's convenient for parents, convenient for mm-hmm. the students. And we found that even if we've got a site like, Monroe is right here, right? Mm-hmm. Most of those kids aren't going to come to that site to get services, so they just wouldn't get the services. Versus when we're directly in the school, they utilize the services way more.
So is that in addition to community services, or is this like a caveat, like a instead of type of services? I'm not sure, because behavioral health goes outside of the school, so I'm just kind of trying to understand. Like, again, I'm sorry, I've got no information, yeah. So
no problem.
I'm flying blind.
So we do behavioral health services in our clinic sites,
mm-hmm.
so it's in addition to, I think, is what you're asking.
Okay.
Yep.
Your program is not limited, though, to just students. It can be adults and or students
yep.
at your site.
Absolutely.
Just at the school, it's just students only.
Yeah, it's primarily yep. students. I mean, others could, teachers could take advantage if they want, but
and then
keep busy enough with the students.
I think that's where 70,000 comes in.
And then when we look at the last week, too, talk to us a little bit about your hiring practice, because we were talking about, the high school and the addition, and then what that begins to look like, because, I know you have certain numbers that you hit, and then you have to add staff, and what's that look like?
Yep. So that's probably our biggest challenge, is really trying to staff the need. And so as a federally qualified health center as well, when we move into a new site, so even if we have a MOU for Monroe Public Schools, you know, when we go into, say, Raisinville Elementary, we have to get permission from the federal government to go to that new site. That's something that we do behind the scenes, but there was a process to that. It takes a bit of time. It also gives us a little bit of time to figure, okay, what's the staffing need, right? How much can we anticipate is going to be the need? How many days do we need to be in a given school? So we're always trying to balance what's the caseload like and trying to anticipate what's the staffing need going to be in order to meet that need.
Because you don't get your dollars from the state, you get them from the federal government because you're federally qualified, right?
Yeah, we get.
Yeah.
So we get some money from the federal government. Primarily, we get our money through billing insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
We get the money we get from the federal government really helps cover the cost of those uninsured, underinsured, sliding fee scale, families,
right,
who can't otherwise afford it.
Right. Right.
Wonderful.
I have some questions on the MOU when we get to that.
We're there.
Oh, okay. So in section 2.1, and I don't know if I don't have it right here in front of me, but it talks about operating the clinic. So it says that it will operate the clinic based on mutually agreed upon days and hours. I was confused at what clinic we were referring to at that point. Is it the outside clinic that you were just referring to? Is it the ProMedica clinic over at the high school? I didn't know what we were talking about.
It's the school. It would be considered the clinic. So it's mutually agreed on days and times with the school.
So the clinic is the entire school?
Well, whichever school it is, so whether it's Raisinville, whether it's Orchard View, whatever it is, it's the individual schools. So we typically work with the principals of the school to determine what days and times we're going to be there.
Yeah, so why wouldn't it be services rather than referred to as a clinic?
Change your language if you like.
Yeah. Well, it you know, a school can't be the entire school can't be a clinic. It just can't be under the.
We just consider our room, our space,
okay,
kind of the clinic.
Okay, maybe we can change that. There was a lot of the MOU is based on medical information usage, because when I first read it, that's what I thought the whole thing was going to be about. How do you manage the medical information? How has it transpired? You know, who gets it and whatnot? Is that the primary reason for the MOU, or is it to operate?
The medical is not the primary. It really is the behavioral health, but I mean, there is still management of information. Obviously, there's HIPAA and there's FERPA and all those
right.
things. So yeah, that's kind of the purpose, is to delineate
managing for HIPAA compliance throughout the service.
Yep.
Okay. Under Section 8, under insurance and liability, I guess this is my question in general is. Why does the school want to take this on when there's other community resources? I understand that you've been here for 4 years, and I'm not suggesting that you haven't done a fantastic job, because I don't know. I don't have any data on that. But when we look at insurance and liability and the cost, there is a cost associated with that, based on what I read. I'm not a lawyer, so you all can think about that one. My other thing was in Section 20, it talked about a professional relationship with the students on a need to know. A need to know was in quotes. I didn't understand what that meant. Like, what does that section mean? What is the professional relationship with the students, and what would need to know be in quotes for? I didn't understand any of that.
I would have to look. I don't know.
So it says, notwithstanding any professional or ethical standards regarding confidentiality to the contrary, FMC acknowledges that the provision of the services within a school environment often requires the disclosure on a need-to-know basis of certain information which may be obtained during a counseling session with a student.
Yeah, HIPAA can't be a need-to-know like that. So I that's why I referred to this as, are we talking about dissemination of healthcare information? And if we are, a need to know wouldn't fit with that. And if we're talking about students and their mental health, a need to know wouldn't fit there either. So I would just need someone to explain that to me.
So I think need to know would be, so if a student relays self-harm sorts of tendencies, or you know, maybe physical violence towards somebody else during a session, our therapists have an obligation to potentially take some action.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a need to know. That would be legal obligation under being able to, you have to be a self-report. They have to be a mandated reporter.
Yep.
And you'd have to report any harm to self or others, and that's part of a mandation.
Yep, and then there's potentially some need to know with the school, right? So school, you know, principal, things like that. If a student has expressed an intent to harm somebody in the school, there is a need to know for, we have to let somebody in the school know as well.
Yeah. I'm just thinking in a memorandum of understanding is similar to a contract in all essences, and that just seems very ambiguous to me, especially when we were talking about healthcare, especially behavioral healthcare in students.
So when we're really looking at, though, that professional or ethical standards is what I exactly understand what he's saying here is that I'm in there and I'm talking about hurting another student because I'm upset over the situation. In that scenario, is there an ethical and or professional requirement to not disclose that to Steve, the high school principal, to protect that other student?
That's mandated reporting. You have to, that's part of mandation reporting.
If I'm going to hurt somebody, if I'm saying I'm going to go punch this person.
Yeah, because it's a harm to others. You have to report if there's a harm to self or a harm to others. Am I misunderstanding that?
Yeah, mandated reporting is not, that's different than what we're talking about here.
Right.
Mandated so you do. So if someone is going to harm themselves or others, it's a need to know. Is that what we're talking about? This sounds in quotes, need to know. Yeah. And I don't know, lawyer, you tell me.
It's actually, it's a legal term. So.
It's the legal term? See, that's all someone has to tell me. Thank you. The last one was, why is Section 22 so lengthy? Section 22, the whole illegal alien thing. It's very lengthy. I was just curious as to why that section was so lengthy. And I had not seen that before.
Lawyers wrote this too, so. Is that about employment and things like that?
Yeah, verification. Yeah.
This is pretty long. I just, again, my curiosity sometimes just needs to be answered.
So
I think it outlines probably our obligation to make sure that, you know, we're the people, the staff that we're hiring are.
We overwork in the United.
Yeah, I thought that was like federal or state law.
Yeah, to be
realize.
Employed and those sorts of things. Yeah. Yeah. And why it's so long, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
Yep. So for us, as far as like your question in regards to the insurance and liability, why Monroe Public years ago brought them in here and why we're asking them, obviously, to stay. We're not asking, and if there was a choice, I mean, we're going to keep it in the other four buildings we currently have. I mean, if that's where it comes down to. But for here, it's about the division of services. There's no one organization in our community that can provide all the services.
No, there is. It's called Community Mental Health.
There's
they just got their designation where they can do the same thing.
So Community Mental Health is for the severe. So they need to qualify for community mental health. So we don't do the same services community mental health does.
That was till they got their new, they just got that new certification. They are now a
CCPHC.
And so that opened all of that up. The board has a seat on the community coalition, of which is part of the mental health and the Board of Education. We are part of that organization. And so working with community mental health was a big thing, and this was the biggest component of that, was to open that barrier up. And so my question is, why aren't we looking at utilizing the resources in the community rather than providing?
So I can help you there. Had the high school not brought this to our attention, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. Because we would have just, the services at our four buildings would have just kept going because we're servicing kids until community mental health would have brought something forward to us.
I did. I came to you a couple of times about the community coalition and behavioral health, and I think it was at the last work session.
But
I said, what are we doing about addressing behavioral health needs within the school, and how can the community help?
So what I did not understand, and I apologize for that, Darla, was that community mental health is now in a position with employees and other opportunities to offer this kind of service. I would also argue the point that it would be wise for this district to if community mental health is there to provide services for our kids, great. right alongside of Family Medical Center, right alongside of ProMedica, right alongside of anyone else we have, because it's services to our kids and to our community. Right. And these guys are, this company is also located in our community.
Right, but the reason I brought that up is we were talking about staffing, and you were talking about, you have the same thing, everybody else has staffing challenges. And the fact that there is one psychiatrist for this entire system. And so when we look at what other systems exist within the community that has already built out some things, I'm not saying everybody may not have some similar challenges, one psychiatrist for the capacity and two nurse practitioner psychiatrists doesn't sound like, I don't know how many patients they can see, but that can't possibly be meeting the need of all of this.
Actually, we pay a close attention to that, just like we do our therapist caseloads, and they are meeting the needs that we have currently.
So one psychiatrist can service that many students?
The three mental health practitioners, psychiatrists, nurse practitioners, does meet our need right now, for sure. There's not a lot of kids who are being prescribed medication.
Again, I don't have this information, so I don't know if you're seeing 10 kids or you're seeing 300 kids. So I'm looking at it as we have 4,000 kids. Yeah. So if 4,000 kids need services, I'm looking at where can they get those services best met. Just because, I know nothing about your organization per se, but if we're looking at what do we do going forward, you know, what options are there? I mean, there are more than one option mm-hmm. right now, and there is a big community build out right now on behavioral health services, because you have a board member that sits on a community coalition that we've been working on this for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't it be, to me, let's look at the options that we have on the table, provide us with some data, provide us with some information, and look and say how would the board like to go forward on this?
So that's where I go back to. I don't think it's a it's pick them or pick them. I think for Monroe Public Schools, it's embrace all, because to say that
well, for sure.
Because it's all about that. So, again, this recommendation that's in front of us tonight was really so that Monroe High School has an opportunity for more services. And if community mental health can come to the table and assist in providing more services at Monroe High School, beautiful. And so that's why that was here tonight, was just allowing that, which of they're already in four of our buildings. Why this was, and I go back to pre-me, wasn't presented as a back when even the middle school came on, or actually probably when like the third building came on, as just one memorandum of understanding for the district. I don't know.
And this is so the first time I even know anything about this.
Sure.
And so I'm always looking at how can we move forward along with everybody else here, but only because we as a Board of Education sit on a coalition of which, I'm sorry, I wasn't familiar with what you have to provide. That's why I asked you the question about the community mental health connection there and how your organization is working within the community.
We work really closely with the community mental health, have for many years, and continue to do so. We coordinate all of the time, sort of on back and forth with patients.
Yeah. And that's why I asked that.
Yeah. And my sense is community mental health isn't going to be interested or capable of putting therapists in the schools. Maybe they will.
There's been conversations already.
And if they want to, I would say utilize whatever resources you got. There's a great need out there.
Well, for sure. So, behavioral health is where everything is needed right now.
Yep.
It's a huge opening.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we would welcome working with, there are some schools that have more than one service in the school.
Yeah.
You know, we've got no concerns with that at all. But like I say, there's unfortunately, more than enough work out there.
I think if I would have had data and information, I probably would have a lot less questions.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to answer questions. So.
But at the end there, I would also say, though, too, you've got four buildings already using this company. So the data would do what? Because all we're doing is just going from four memorandums of understanding to one.
So that was that it's either we return it from four memorandums into one. I thought the memorandums were renewed every year. They're renewed continuously unless they're not.
Yeah, they're, but we don't bring them back to the board to renew each year. They're just, it's an automatic renewal unless either party decides to.
Well, the party would be.
Us. But at the end of the day, though, we would have to, I would be making a recommendation to the board saying we have this scenario going on with the Family Medical Center, and so we're going to execute the clause for separation.
Well, I didn't say we should do that.
No, that's what I'm saying, though.
I'm just saying if we had the information.
That's where it would come. Otherwise, you would not, for our board, it would not get back into this, come back into this room as far as bringing them back in each annually, unless there was.
Unless you're adding another school or something.
Well, but now that's why this memorandum's here for the whole. Otherwise, if it was just like those, the four, and had we not have taken that call, or David and I got on a call last week.
But that's where I'm at. If it's going to be extended throughout all of the system, and this one memorandum would open it up to every school in the system, I'm not opposed to that. I'm not suggesting I'm opposed to that. But if that's the case, and that's the decision what the board's going to make tonight, I just would have liked data and information to say, wow, these people are awesome. They've done a fantastic job. They've helped this many students. They've had this much stuff. They've serviced this many hours. They've done all of this. So that's where I come from on it.
Okay.
I do have one question. Now, are you approved for all the 9 facilities that we have, all of 9 locations? Did the federal government approve you for all those?
We actually, I think we just got approval in the last week for the remaining. So I think Raisinville Elementary and Manor Elementary were the two that we got approval for. Yeah. So I think we have approval for, I believe, 6 buildings at this point.
So we're still having to work through the high schools. That one's not on there yet.
But we have a facility at the high school.
ProMedica does.
Oh, you're right.
Yep.
Okay, you're.
Yep. ProMedica, and that's the thing is that's to Darla's point. I mean, that's exactly what we think about. Mental Health, Family Medical Center, ProMedica, all being a part. I mean, we have lots of options for our kids and our families that can branch out into the community. And so one entity may have more strength to get out into the community to work with our kids and our families, where another one may not. Or the capacity, I guess, is probably a better way.
I think Tom has a question. Tom?
I just have a simple one. Section 2.2, where you kind of explain the services. You talk about primary and preventative medical care, which I understand, along with the mental health, but it also mentions dental health services. What does that involve?
So we don't do dental in the schools. We do have dental at our clinic here in Monroe, so people could go there for it. Mm-hmm. So we try to do some of this memorandum understanding, again, being in so many different school districts, the MOU kind of covers. So we're doing some student health centers. Mm-hmm. So that does medical care, and we're opening those up this spring in a couple of different schools. The nearest one here would be Airport School District in Carleton. So we'll do medical services there and eventually dental services as well. So it's kind of just to make sure that we've got everything covered.
Okay. Thank you.
I am of the purview that each system operates in success when it focuses on one goal. That's why I think education should stick with education.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Just a caveat. So we do have dentists that come into the elementary schools that do perform like
pro bono
cleanings
kind of,
and things. Yeah.
Okay. So how would that fit with dentists?
I feel like they could complement each other.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that they would be talking about behavioral health and mental health issues, it could complement the fact that they're not currently providing dental care, but this other organization does to those students that need it. I feel like it could be, I feel like it would be providing our families with a variety of healthcare services that they might not normally have access to. They might not have the transportation. They might not be able to take off time to take their kid to a doctor's appointment. Or it's just ease of use to just walk down the hallway and
so
get your teeth cleaned and then walk back to class.
They don't do dental. You just said
currently
they don't.
No. But
right.
We do have dentists
right.
That come into
right.
The schools.
But
and
he doesn't do dental.
No.
Right.
I was just
and you're not providing like psychiatric services in the facility, you're doing behavioral.
We're doing behavioral health counseling in the facility. If a student and a family would like psychiatric services to see a psychiatrist, we do that via telehealth.
You refer out for that? Or that happens within the school as well?
It could happen within the school. That would happen via telehealth. So our psychiatrist would be sitting in their office, whether it's in Temperance or whatever, and then they would have a telehealth video link, real-time audio-visual, where they could actually see a psychiatrist or a psychiatric nurse practitioner. So that's available.
But you're
saying, what's your consent process then for services for students like?
Yeah, parents have to consent to all services.
Is that a written consent?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then is there a verbal? I know with the one contract that we have, there's a written mm-hmm. consent, and then at any time that those services would be triggered during the day, there would be a verbal consent on top of that as well. Is that something you do? So let's say at the beginning of the school year, you say, can David come and be seen by our services? And they go, sure, if he needs it. And so Tuesday rolls around and your team goes and meets with David. Would they call the parents and let them know, hey, we're going to meet with David on the, today? Or would that, at the very beginning of the year, qualify for all?
The beginning of the year would qualify for all, but parents get notifications. So if they want notifications, they would get text notifications of, hey, Johnny's going to be seen Tuesday at, 3 o'clock or whatever. So they get notified that that's happening. Parents can always participate if they would like. So they can.
But a student can be sent to your services without the parent knowing during a school day.
It's possible. Yeah. Yep. Although they've previously consented.
Right. That's the thing is that for this to happen, it's not like the Pomatica Health Center. This is where the parents have already, the conversation's been had with Family Medical Center, with the parents, and so they've already signed the waiver, and then schedule is potentially created of, okay, we're going to.
How does that happen then? How does the
he just said that they,
consent
the,
get done?
He was just describing that a parent. Go ahead.
So any new, a new student, so we get a referral.
Okay, that's the part. You get a referral from someone within the school.
The first session, okay. The parents and or guardian have to attend.
Okay, now I'm catching on. Gotcha. I missed that part, yep. And that is very critical. Yep. So, yes, thank you.
Okay, good deal. All right, any other questions?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So the next item on our list on the agenda right here is school index ratings and review. Last week, Tuesday or Wednesday, I believe it was, we got notified that the 2022-2023 data was available. It was embargoed for us to review, so we reviewed it, brought Kathy Berry in, and went over it. And then in the school ratings, we have two documents in your hands over that you have. One is under Every Student Succeeds at, it's a Michigan School Accountability, and it's a six-page document. It's three-page because it's back-to-back. And so it gets into the why, and so this is from a federal level. And then on the 22-23 report layout guide, it's a descriptor of what's underneath inside of each quadrant, okay? And so there's eight different quadrants right here. And so what we wanted to do tonight was show you what our data looked like in 21-22 school year, followed by the 22-23. And so we're going to walk you through Custer first and then each building. And so you have your overall index, and the index is 100. And it's not a percentage, it's just an index number. And so as we look at these numbers, our goal is always to be moving towards 100. That's the ultimate goal that we should always be trying to achieve, is towards 100.
What does 100 mean then?
The 100 is just an index number.
Yeah, but I mean,
there's no percentage.
Good, bad, or
what's that?
Good, bad, and different.
It's good.
Oh.
Good is 100 is where you want to move to, because that's where, and so it's because it's a positive number. So we're always trying to move towards that a 100 number.
So that's the best we can be.
That's the best you can be, is 100. Okay. So you have an overall index. And so in that overall index, it takes all of these boxes right there that pertain to that building and generate an index score, overall score. Now, to go, there's, understand that this is, as far as the formulary and everything like that, it's very complicated because it takes in a lot of factors. So when we look at, for Custer, in the 21-22 school year, they had an index score of 33. Then this past year, their index score, which was just released yesterday to the public, went to 54 overall index score. So that school index score overall is moving in a positive trajectory. Their growth index, and Terry and David, you guys are part of that meeting, so if at any point, please chime in too, okay? Because Kathy helped us greatly there. And so that index, the growth index score is growth in both math and ELA. And so did we have students growing? And so based on the parameters for Custer, they had a score of a 34. And again, we're trying to move to 100. This past year, their now growth index score is a 64. So students are growing. Their proficiency index, and that one went from an 18 to a 22. So one of the things that when we were talking with Kathy that she reminded us of is that when we showed you our MSTEP scores recently in that pie chart, and you were looking at them, you saw the red, and then you saw the yellow, the green, and the blue. And we talked about how that red has to get smaller and how kids would be moving forward. And we showed you how the red from 1 year got to the next year moved smaller. It's the same thing. So if we're looking at that growth index, and that growth index is growing, that means our kids are that down the road, that proficiency index will also begin to move, because you can't, it's about being proficient, which is levels 1 and 2, 3 and 4 are not. And so if we're moving kids from 3 and 4 forward, then that will shift. Obviously, they have no graduation. And English language learners, you have to have a cohort, you have to have 30 students inside a grade level to be represented there. And so at this building, they do not have that. School quality index, I want to read to you. School quality and student success overall tile display combined 0 to 100 performance index in the areas of on-track attendance, post-secondary enrollment, which Custer would not be heading towards post-secondary, advanced coursework completion, and staffing ratios where applicable. And so, for example, do you have physical education? Do we have, they have this huge ratio that they look at even with a, for media center. And so for that, so for Custer, they went from a 53 to an 89 there. And then assessment participation, here they went from a 99 to a 99.1 to a 99.56. And again, that's when we look at all students that take the MME in both areas, ELA and math, it could be just one child on and one segment that did not. So when we look at the movement here in this building, lots of positiveness. If we look at the category, which would be number 2, which is that one that says support category. Remember last year we talked about in the fall that we knew we had buildings that were going to be put onto a list. And so this was one of the buildings that was put on the ATI list, Additional Targeted Support. And so this building is sitting on this list. I think this is a five years, I think they sit on this list. And so for Custer, they're making the kind of gains and directions that you need to have to be removed off that list. So before we move on to the next ones, are there any questions because they're all going to be the same after that. So I want to make sure we answer any questions that you might have. So if we take a look then at Arborwood in the fall of in the 21-22 school year, overall index was a 28.5. Moved to a 49.6. Growth index of a 26 to a 58.9. Proficiency index went from a 14.7 to a 17.2. And then their school quality and student success index went from a 47.7 to an 83. And then if you take a look at their assessment participation, they've moved up to 100s on both categories there. For Manor's overall index had a 65.8 in the 21-22 year to an 81. Their growth index went from a 90 to a 96. Proficiency from 37 to 56. Their success index went from a 60 to a 92. And then their assessment participation went to a 100 also.
So an additional targeted support,
yes, ma'am,
and a universal support. I'm assuming they're on their scale.
Yep.
So which one, targeted is?
So you go from universal to targeted to CSI?
CSI.
Okay, so universal is what you want to be doing at all times, okay? And so.
That's universal.
That's a great spot to live, and then you have your ATS and then your CSIs.
So under targeted support, what kind of support services does the state provide those targeted support systems in?
So last year when we had to go through with our three buildings, actually it was a four. Our four buildings, the state provided us supports to put the programs together and or you want to talk more about that because I know it wasn't necessarily just programs, but data digs into what may have got us on that list and then what goals and objectives we have to then.
So these two schools will remain in that?
Yeah, so the state won't come back out for another 5 years to then review and go, okay, yes, Custer Elementary has now achieved and is now no longer on that as considered a universal support school.
I remember you and I talked about that before, Terry.
I wonder if Terry could explain maybe a little bit more about that process to us. I'm not quite sure.
Sure. So I can do the best that I can.
That's all we
Hopefully
ask.
Hopefully I can answer your questions. So as Andy said, there's three different identifiers. So universal support, it means that you're not on any list. ATS schools, which is where Custer and Arborwood are, those schools, when they do their improvement plans, you're probably familiar with schools having to do improvement plans each year. With that work, the district is closely working with those schools to develop those plans. And then the CSI schools, which are Orchard and Monroe Middle School, those are the other two schools we have on the list. Those two schools, with that label, you get support from your local ISD. So our ISD was very much involved with us last year. That would be Kathy Berry, Chris Todd, and Patty. She came and talked with the board a few times. So they supported a lot of the work that we did. When you create your plan, when you're a CSI school or an ATS school, there's a lot of different requirements that you have to do in terms of your data analysis and monitoring your student improvement and what your strategies are that you're going to do to make gains in student growth. In terms of funding, the state doesn't really give us any money to do anything and different than any other school would, so there's no additional funding.
But the ISD does come in to, you know, being on
The ISD, when you have CSI schools, the ISD then is involved and they provide support. And we were really appreciative last year to have Kathy Berry and Chris Todd's help with things. I don't know if any of you have met them, but they're incredibly brilliant ladies who really understand data and really, you know, helped us to be able to think through what we were doing as a district and helped us to formulate our plan.
So what did they say about the middle school, for example? I mean, did they try to analyze where we got to where we are? And if so, what kind of suggestions did they have to overcome those barriers and that sort?
So I don't know that anyone can really answer why we got where we were at. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, like with the last couple of years, we've been, getting through the COVID pandemic. Last year was the first year that we were not under any COVID regulations, so that definitely helped us in a lot of different ways. We really looked a lot at curriculum. Andrea did a lot of work with what are those forms called, Andrea, that we were worked with the ISD
strategy implementation guides.
Yeah. So with those strategy implementation guides, we did it, like, for example, for the elementary math curriculum. And as we work through that, it helps us to understand and think through what that implementation process looks like and, like, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So it's very clearly defined in terms of what
what the expectations are from the district.
Okay, you lost me there as to what's defined and et cetera.
Can I pass that to you?
The strategy implementation guide would be that we're taking, whether it's a practice or a curriculum or an implementation of some sort of program, and we define it in what is the gold standard for our school. So it's often thought about over the course of maybe 3 years.
Right.
So in 3 years' time, what does the gold standard look like when we know we've got there and we're doing all of these things?
Right.
Then perhaps what would a acceptable variation look like? So if we're talking time, we said 60 minutes per day spent in the math workshop. An acceptable variation might be 45 minutes, given that you might have some transition time or there might be an interruption that happens. And if we're saying that it happens 5 times per week, there may not be an acceptable variation. So on that strategy implementation guide, we've been really specific to say, no, there isn't. It should happen every single day. So there isn't an acceptable variation. And then you have a column that would say, what's the unacceptable? So maybe it's not providing the support that's needed, not providing the professional development that's required. And then we have these, we have cycles where we go back and we look at, okay, what did that look like in year one? Did we meet these gold standard pieces? How far, where are we at? And we can rate ourselves using that guide. And that's something that principals can take back to their buildings and coaches and talk with their staff. Just a nice way for us to look at the different things that we're putting in place and then figure out where we fall within those.
What did the ISD add to that process that we develop, implement, think of ourselves? And where was ISD's input? I mean, what did they say that was there anything that was really just a ha moment, something of that sort? In other words, like Andy said, I think kind of the goal is to have the state or the ISD, whatever the case may be, assist us in, I don't want to say doing what we can't do, but I mean, assisting us in improving the process. How did they assist us in improving the process?
So with the ISD, what they're really, what they've done is they help us work through the questions we should be asking. And so when we really, we're diving in, we're looking at, for example, MSTEP and these scores, and we're getting it into subgroups, and that's drilling way down, is asking those questions, okay, so why is this happening? And then trying to unfold that. And so to say, though, did they bring in a unique resource that we would not have had? They're there just to help, again, just help us have a big conversation. We have a standing meeting, I believe it's actually tomorrow, with them each month at a high level. And it's, again, it's just that conversation, because from going from four minds to six minds, it's just that strength right there.
Oh, just
and then what they
a different perspective.
Different perspective.
So really,
things that they would have seen in through other trainings that we may not have been at. You got to remember that they both work at the state level too, uncovering things.
I think too, like providing resources for us. So as we were going through last year with the math adoption with Envision and considering other resources, they were really helpful at giving us names of different schools that were using different programs and different schools that had success. So they know like different schools that have shown a lot of improvement, a lot of growth, and so having us talk with them. So I think a big part of what they've done for us, especially last year and into this year, is the provision of resources that we might not have known about otherwise.
Just a wider scope than we.
State would come into the facility, it sounds like a very similar process. And it was to look at the systems that you were utilizing and the systems you were suggesting of putting in place and say what they felt the success rate would be at what you're doing and what you're implementing based on their expertise and their knowledge of the rest of the schools in the system.
I guess that's
how healthcare worked.
Is that their expertise, or is it just a more broad knowledge of different?
In healthcare, it was also a penal system because you were essentially told that you can't run your building well enough, that the state had to come in and help you run the building in some instances.
Well, that's kind of what I'm getting.
So that was it. That's what it was like in healthcare. Yeah. Now I don't do the education side of it, but that's what it was like in healthcare.
Well,
which is often the case.
If we weren't to, Larry, to change our not change, continue to enhance what we're doing and. We would actually regress further, then, yeah, the state's coming in and going, okay, you're no longer a CSI. It's that next level, and it can be where they're coming in and telling you, you're going to do this, and people are being fired and all of
well,
that.
That was the lowest, CSI. I think that was the lowest. What's the lowest level?
No, I think.
Those are the three levels that we have in Monroe Public Schools, so yes. The CSI is our lowest level.
You are lowest level, but it can go lower than that. Okay.
There's another level there.
Oh, really?
That's okay.
That's where Detroit was.
Yeah. So.
I'm sorry.
That's where Detroit was.
Yeah. Oh.
That's when the state came into Detroit and basically said, out with your admin. We're putting in our admin.
Yes.
We're bringing in our curriculum. We're doing these things. We're going to take over your finances.
Yep.
That's where Detroit was. Yeah.
Same as healthcare. Yeah. Same thing.
And so.
Because I mean,
I know a lot of our educators are not only working in this system, but they. Some are getting their master's, some are working at Eastern Michigan University, doing different things. They would have a broad perspective of what's happening, too. That's what I'm wondering, how does that differ from what the state or the ISD is doing? And maybe it's just an... right. Okay.
I'm struggling with this a little bit.
Which
whole rating system, based on the fact that you show Arborwood and Custer are under this improvement
mm-hmm.
plan designation, and Waterloo is not. Yet Waterloo, by all MSTEP assessment, is our worst elementary school.
Yep. Right.
So why would they be there and not Waterloo?
My understanding is that those numbers are based on growth. And so I don't understand, to be honest, like where the cutoffs are in terms of how much growth you have to show and what those numbers need to be. But as they rank schools, at least to our knowledge right now, Waterloo is not on the list.
Yep.
Yeah, because some of the school rankings just came out in the last couple
of
weeks.
Yes, I would agree that is confusing.
And Waterloo is by far our worst elementary school.
And we're aware. That's the thing. We know, and we know that that continual work that's happening, and it's ongoing right now. It's the things that we already have put in place with the class sizes, with the we've had the teachers in. Let's get it wrong.
Professional development.
Our professional development, but the staff trainers that have been in working in our buildings, and so it's taking hold, and so you know we don't. Waterloo, we know, and that's why we're continually digging deep right there to that they do have enough achievement so they stay off of the list. But remember, too, that what we even though we had two schools that are ETI and two CSI schools, really what we're doing is whole district because we weren't going to risk Raisinville, we weren't going to risk Waterloo or any of the buildings. So a lot of the work carries over from these other buildings into the buildings that are still on a universal list. But if we wanted,
but the two data should correlate and they should support each other in the total big picture. You can't ever take one thing and say we can only look at this because you have to look at the totality, especially from a board standpoint. That's what we're our main goal here is for that.
Yep.
Like that's it. I mean that's.
So let's look at Raisinville, then we can flip the water, okay? Because up to this point, I hope you're seeing, though, that the numbers are shifting. They're not, and they're shifting. They're not little shift numbers. I mean, these are big numbers. And there's, you know, we look at Raisinville, and we look at that overall index of a 49 to a 64, that growth from 57 to 77, proficiency from 31 to 35. Success down there at the bottom left of 58 to an 87, and also moved their assessment participation to 100. So, you know, another positive one there. We go now.
What does your data say on Raisinville?
It's not.
It, basically, it does, it actually shows Raisinville's the best of the five.
In increase, I think it shows.
Yeah, it actually, it shows Raisinville had the biggest jump of any of the, of our elementary schools in the rankings. And this is, they're ranked according to, there's 1,470 elementary schools in this ranking.
Right.
And they jumped 96 points from where they were last year. So
that data supports the growth that we're seeing in discharge.
Yeah, and Manor jumped a little bit. Manor jumped 22 spots, so it did jump as well. Still nowhere near where we should be.
No.
We're still the bottom of the county by far.
Yep. And we understand that, but we're looking at, we have to find positives. We go from the 21-22 year, and we're looking at these index numbers to the 22-23, and we're seeing positives. So now it's a matter of keep the momentum and keep the work happening, and so that we keep that momentum going. When we look at Waterloo, and I think, Tom, this will help right here. If you look at Waterloo, their overall index went from a 31.8 to a 52.2. Growth from 39 to 73, so they had a lot of growth. They regressed, though, in their proficiency from a 12 to an 11. And so that's probably where you're seeing that Waterloo slipped right there. The other part being a lot of growth would also indicate that back to the percentage of students that are, and we didn't want to, when we drilled down, we kept it at a high level for you guys as a whole. But you drill down right there that, Waterloo may have been close to making this. They didn't this year. And so now it's a continual support right there with the expectation that from that growth index from a 39 to a 73, that we should see that proficiency index now move in a more positive manner because we had students that showed growth.
So help me understand that. If you have an overall index increase at that capacity, you have a growth increase that it's not double, but it's a significant increase. Why would the proficiency drop?
So if
we're saying, as we see these increase, that's showing the growth, but when we have increase and a proficiency drop, there's got to be a...
So your growth, remember, that's growing from your level fours or threes. So those are not proficient yet, students. And so that's where we saw a lot of our growth. Your proficiency is where that one, it walked backwards. And so... by 2 points. Now, that what is that rec? By 1 point. What is that? How many students, or what does that relate to? Couldn't tell you what that one is, but that's where the billing will drill down. But that growth is moving again those level fours to threes and threes to twos.
It's those individual kids that are moving inside the red. We've got less students that are in the green and proficient numbers wise, but those individual kids are growing and learning and demonstrating progress. And I think that's what the growth index is showing here.
Yep.
So you're saying that course is corresponding with this data.
But they might not be proficient.
Right.
They're not hitting proficiency, but there's a growth within their own category.
They're not failing as bad.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Their individual students are growing,
Maybe not enough
year to year.
Of it.
Yep. You're right. Demonstrating individual growth on those assessments.
But not at the rate that you're going to be able to say at the end of the school year, you are successful in that grade to move to the next grade.
Okay. I think as Tom said it best,
the bottom's moving up.
Yep.
The top may be staying where it is, but the bottom's moving up.
And so the key is that over the next 2 years, that bottom number is into that third number and into the second number.
And I think Tom's numbers, by and large, reflect the proficiency. And that's the problem.
So if we...
optics, too.
Yep.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Move over to the middle school. And the middle school was a CSI school, and you see that they went overall index from a 43 to a 69. Growth index from a 47 to an 84. Proficiency index from a 32 to a 43. Success, school quality went from 51 to an 81, and then testing from a 97 to a 98. So the middle school made, in all areas, some very strong movement last year. And what we keep recognizing is that the middle school had a lot going on last year and still showed growth and still showed proficiency achievement, too.
How long has Monroe Middle been a CSI?
I know you and I had a conversation when I first started coming here years ago, a few years ago.
It's the start of its second year, I believe, right, Terry?
I thought it was 5 years, and then because of COVID hit, they couldn't get their designation off.
It remained the same.
Mm-hmm. So it remained the same, but it was years before that. That was my understanding, only because that came up when I was sitting out there.
Yeah, I don't remember which year for sure, darling.
But it's been a while.
But it was before COVID.
Yeah.
So when we look at Orchard, overall index went from a 23 to a 34. Growth index from a 16 to a 32. Proficiency, 12 to a 19. Graduation rate, 68 to a 64. Graduation rate's not only a 4-year, but it's the 5-year, the 6-year, so it's those cohorts there. School quality from a 23 to a 45. Assessment participation from a 70 to a 65. So it had growth. But we know that in this building right here, that both that the graduation rate and the that assessment participation. And so we talked to James about how that in your school quality and your assessment participation, those are low-hanging fruit. We've got to figure out how to get the kids in the door on a consistent basis and then continue on working all students towards graduation. And they've got the mechanisms in there, and sometimes it's just a matter of the will to get our kids into the buildings.
When did Orchard become a CSI, Terry? You know?
We'll put that in your board brief. Yeah, we'll research that out for you.
But I don't remember. I don't want to say what year because I don't know.
Not just now.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if this was a new designation or not because I thought there were three, but I don't know the numbers now.
Andy, on the graduation rate, you said if they go into the fifth year, it is.
Mm-hmm. It's counted. Yep. So if we get a student that's in their fifth year or even that sixth year cohort and finish. And so, you know, we look at David's done a lot of work this year with Graduation Alliance, getting them in the door and working and grabbing kids that maybe are sitting out there that are no longer part of our system to get them a diploma. And so it's been a hunting down of students. And so I know that was the very first task he had when he came on, was to research all of our students and make contact there. So
talked about that today.
Yeah. We got one student who's earlier in the week he was 1 credit away, and now he's 0.5 credits away.
Oh,
so wow. English 12B, it's all he has left, so we're pretty proud of him.
Wow.
So. And then when we look at Monroe High School, their overall index went from a 49 to a 55. Growth index, 34 to 47. Proficiency, 39.9 to a 45. Graduation rate, 94 to 97. And again, that's all 3 years there. They did have a subgroup in their building that popped up, which was the English Learner Progress. And so that's now being watched because it's greater than 30 students at that one grade level. School quality went from a 60 to a 75. And then their assessment participation, 97 to 99. And then from a 100 and slipped up. 0.75 right there. So the other thing you want to always remember, we're trying to always get to 100, maintaining 100. In some areas, we will work towards maintaining that 100 as best we can. That assessment participation, that's one that we can always try to always get towards 100 score there. But that when we looked at this last week come out, you know, we smiled because it's like, okay, we only had, and you look at all of those different quadrants, overall, from all of our buildings, we only had, I think it was 3 that went backwards. All the rest went up, and some of them went up mightily. And so, very good success there. And all this is meeting the requirements of the federal government for the ESSA. And so that's the Every Student Succeeds Act. And so that's part of that federal government and what they have to report. So it's just another way of taking that MSTEP information, rolling together in a way that the building is progressing. What we have done now is at the building level is we've taken the exact same thing we did with the MSTEP, and it's a deep dive in what's happening right there. So, for example, is one of the when we're looking at proficiency index, you know, is it our students with a disability? Is it our students of color? Is it other? Probably one of the things that we did see that was a big aha moment. Students, English language learners, actually had probably the greatest growth at the elementary and when it came to that proficiency index. So When we think about what your question was around with the, how the ISD supported, was then it's around those questions, okay, like, so what was going on then with the kids, English language learners, for them to have that kind of success? Now, we wouldn't see it in the report because it's less than 30, but when you drill it down to the to a lower level, that's what you see there. So that's in your hands right there. Tom, I'll dig into that other one because I had not, like I said, we hadn't seen that come our, hadn't popped up in my radar that the
ratings
of the schools.
I'll send you a copy of that.
Yeah, because that had not arrived yet.
We had talked at one of the other board meetings, and you guys can clarify my brain, about getting regular reports from student services on where we're at. And I think the next one was set for January. Is that still set for January?
Yeah, because we have that.
iReady data.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
I think that's important, you know. That's,
Shall we know where we're going?
Data is good.
Data is good.
Data is good. Data creates less questions by far.
And it shows progress.
So on our next item was the Monroe High School book purchase. Two things here. One is I appreciate Tom and I had a couple conversations on this, and so we've we had a process put together to go through, and what we found is that the process didn't work to the level that we had wanted. So we're going to be pulling the purchase off of the agenda for tonight, and we're going to we met this afternoon on that, pulling that off and taking a and working that process deeper with that. And what that means is we have a set of some different titles that are on that showed up on there, more so that we've got some questions on. And what that question is about, not banning books, but about maybe looking at the books and the purpose behind them, and or should they be on a list where the student wants to check that particular book out, parent would sign off allowing for it, and or allowing our, and we do have a system put together allowing for even a committee to look at it and go, even though it could end up in that as a restricted book for parents to check out, is that still maybe even a book we don't want?
So there is a committee?
So we have.
Remember, we talked about putting a committee together to review books, but I wasn't sure that it actually.
I was looking at some of these books, and
So.
Most of them were with Tom's list. I'm referring to Tom's list. His is more in depth than mine.
So with that.
So there is a committee that reviews books.
Do you need the list?
I didn't.
No, I had my documents. I can't find them. I don't want to do that. So I will forward you guys in your board briefs this week what we constructed, and then you can see that. But it was really what we asked out of our for the high school selection was to take a look at the reversing the system and looking strictly at the controversial book list, and really taking a look at that list first, and if you have any on there, to then digest the why it's there. And so what we have is we have another mechanism, though, that if a book was to be challenged inside there, now we're going to push it into a committee. And so that review committee then would go into effect. And so, but you'll see that in your board briefs. But I just wanted to
get that information.
Yes.
Okay,
yep.
Cool.
Yep. And so
one general question, and this doesn't regard the controversial books, but when I went through that list, I guess I was shocked by the number of books that are comic books or graphic novels.
Would you like me to speak to that?
Yes, please.
So I totally understand that question. We've got, those books have gained an extreme popularity, I would say, over the past 10 to 15 years. And everything that I've come across, like, oh, this is what you're reading in English class, is that kids are reading in English class, and that's a good thing. I know that there are.
The level of reading is pretty basic on a comic book.
A lot of our students.
Are we talking high school level that they're reading these comic books?
Adults read these comic books. It is whatever garners their interest. and the bottom line is that the students are reading. I didn't bring my notes in here, but they're reading. Struggling readers choose to read these books on their free time. These aren't academic books, but they're, you know, choice reads. So I get it. It's something that I had to come to terms with too, that these things they're around.
Is there a plan then as they read comic books to progress them into real books?
Well, those aren't before graduation.
Well, this is
before
the,
graduation. Yes.
Yeah, this is that power. So these are, remember, this is just a literature library for kids just to have something to read.
So this isn't, so I'm totally misunderstanding that, because we were in the high school, the library's like non-existent.
That's right.
So I thought these books were like the new library. Am I misunderstanding this?
These are classroom libraries, so each of the language arts, the classroom.
Every classroom can't have 22,000 books.
Just the ELA classrooms is what this covers.
Huh. So where are all your research books? Like all of, like when we used to have to research papers, you go to the library. Where's all your history books? Where's all your, all of that stuff?
Now.
So AI can just go change it at will. We don't have it in written language anymore.
Like Wikipedia.
Welcome to the future, huh?
Yeah.
But like Encyclopedia Britannica is online. Like they don't do books anymore. Yeah. It's all online. And like that's a big component of high school ELA courses, is to talk about what are reputable services, what are reputable websites, peer-reviewed journals. And when I was finishing my master's 15 years ago, all of the research periodicals are all online. So like going to a library is something that time that you would need to take to go to a library is gone, because now I can go see the American Academy of Pediatrics online. I can go see fill in the blank any other peer-reviewed journal online.
We talked about that last time, though, reputable sites. Like, I think the conclusion was it's impossible to define all the reputable sites out there. We couldn't even define what AI technology was going to be successful or not. So I'm not sure that how that even fits.
Yeah. As I was looking through the book, list of books, I'm thinking, how much do we use books now? I mean, I'm not discouraging the use of books, because obviously that's a good thing, but I'm wondering how much they will be utilized.
The high school is very motivated to purchase these books with the loss of books that happened during COVID, where books were out or taken out and didn't come back. And they're really advocating for their students who want the latest books from the past 2 or 3 years.
How much is murder, killing, death, dying? I was like, oh my goodness! Like there was.
Did you ever?
Was there not a lot of that?
Read Lord of the Flies?
No, killing, and
Lord of the Flies.
Man, there's a lot of that. I was like, can't there be like, I'm looking for nature books on there, like learning about nature, like
gardening,
not killing the neighbor, like
yoga books.
I think that all went way of the horse and buggy.
That's at the elementary.
Me too.
So the security service grant contract, that's we're not bringing that in front of the board for a while. So I'm going to put that on our agenda for our next work session.
Is it in here?
No, we weren't going to. So we were going to go over. We're going to talk about that. And so we're not doing anything there. I'd request a closed session. We're going to pull that there and just talk about I want to spend about 5 minutes right here. I'm okay in public around the goals that were put together. For an employee's goals, it really stems from the evaluation. So the goal, in the evaluation, my personal goal in my evaluation is to move into the highly effective route. And so in talking with Larry and looking at it was, okay, what were some two or three areas that from my evaluation that the board would have viewed that, okay, these are areas to work on. So that's why these goals were created in such a way that focuses there. As far as like the student achievement or those big district level goals there. But each of these areas, so we look at that first goal around working with the Board of Education. And so it is over the course of this next 9 months, because the evaluation happens in September, so it's January through August, is to provide you with training relevant educational issues, budgetary considerations, and emerging trends in education.
Do you think that's your role as a superintendent, to oversee and direct the board?
I'm not saying to provide you.
Enhance the effectiveness of the board. Wouldn't that be the president of the board's job? I'm just asking.
Yep.
That to me, and when I work in boards, the president of the board is the one that.
Yep. So in a school system, the president, the Board of Education president works in conjunction with the superintendent, because the Board of Education president isn't in the building, isn't in the system on a daily basis. But for you, where this goal comes from is the idea around working one-on-one with you, so you understand the budget further, and or this is what's happening in the world of education, so it's even greater workshops, not like the board-level workshops we've done in the past. It could pertain to any of these, AI, for example, working to, so you have a better, clearer understanding of AI. So it's working on there in the relationship with that, with our board, to do that, and so that when it comes down the road to making other decisions, you'll have that perspective with it.
I just don't understand why, you know, and here's where I'm thinking, and maybe I'm misunderstanding these goals, and I admit that if I am, when we were in there and we did the evaluation and we looked at the things we were evaluating, there were things on there that we evaluated, and it was nothing like this. So one of the things on there was, like, we look at abstract, and we looked at how do you define and how do you measure, because I know that was one thing. You look at integrity, and I remember integrity was one of the things on there. And even though you say integrity is this mm-hmm. phenomenon out there, integrity becomes a measurable thing, because it's how do you respond in situations, how do you apply, and how does your team that works beneath you, how do they apply the fairness, the justice, the whatnot across the system? And that's something then that become measurable. And the reason I bring that up is because during that meeting, I gave an example where I felt that was, mm-hmm.
And I right. agree with that, Chuck. And I agree with Andy's major premise, is that this comes out of an evaluation. So for Andy's evaluation, for example, like it or not, we are required to evaluate them on, what, 6 or 7 steps. Okay.
Right, that's what the state tells us.
The state tells us that, okay? It doesn't tell us, like, if we can evaluate one 50% and one 10% or whatever. It doesn't tell us that, okay? But it does tell us those things. So my thought is that when you have goals, okay, for a superintendent, for example, I mean, he would take each one of these items, I mean, to help us and to help him, okay? And to say, this is what we goal, this is what we want to do, and this is how we're going to do it, and this is how we're going to measure it, okay? For example, you could say integrity, for example. We'll try to become more integrate or whatever, not a word, but whatever. And this is how we're going to do it, and here's how we're going to measure that. For example, if I tell 10 lies, I get 5 points, whatever not the case may be, but it's measurable.
Right.
So that when you come into the evaluation for Andy and I come to evaluation, we have a meeting of the minds. So we all 7 have a meeting of the minds of what we're talking about. I mean, if we don't have measurable goals, I mean, it doesn't help Andy, because Andy's going to say, what are they talking about? Because he doesn't have anything to measure. Just for example, if I would take math, okay, and the math teacher says, well, if you can add, we're going to pass you, okay? Whatever that, okay? Does that mean I can add 1 and 1? Does it mean that I can add double numbers? Does it mean I can add integrals? I don't know. Because, again, we haven't defined that. And that's, I think, what we have to do to be fair to Andy, for example. Yeah. I mean, I don't want Andy to say, look, this means nothing to me. This is 7 independent people talking about independent items that has no common measurement. So I think we all have to be on the same level. Because, again, I'll be honest, we're going to lose our superintendent if he doesn't know what he needs to do. And it's not going to help us neither, because it's not going to help us improve as a school district. So we have to be on the same level. Okay. Say, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and this is how we're going to measure it. Okay?
And the measurement's going to be uniform throughout the seven people.
So you want a checkbox?
Well, it doesn't have to be a checkbox, but it has to be some measurable sample.
This is very subjective right here.
Yeah.
Here's how I think integrity was defined. Here's how you think integrity is defined. Here's how she thinks integrity is defined. The meaning of the minds would be, where does that fit, and did you meet the standard of what the requirement was for integrity?
Now, when we set our goals, for example, as a board back in, I think it was 17, okay? We said, for example, the first measurement, okay, we're going to improve it as a school district, okay? We whittled that down, and then we said 70% of the people are going to pass the grade level, whatever not that was, okay? And we said, next year it's going to be this, and next year it's going to be this. So if we want to find out if Andy has done that, Tom knows what I'm talking about. I know what I'm talking about. Larry knows. Everybody knows what we're talking about. Okay? So it's not subjective. It's very objective. So everybody can do it. And then that helps Andy, because Andy's going to say, I know what I have to do. I know how I have to direct my staff. Mm-hmm. Here's how I know we have to put these things in place. Okay?
Yep.
So I think that's what we really need to do, because, again, it's not helping us. It's not helping Andy. It's just exercise of fertility.
So might I suggest that we consider Andy's goals being SMART goals, because this is something that we use for our teaching staff and all of that. So specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time bound.
They have to be SMART goals. It's exactly if you're looking for success and measurement.
Okay.
You're right. That's a very good standard.
I will,
and I think that's what every company
so
does.
We work for this?
Yep. Yeah, I've got a couple ideas. And really, it's I appreciate Larry's point that a construct something so it's at a high level, and then together, as a board myself, we'll pull it together.
Yes.
Okay, so
exactly.
I'll give you a framework, and then we'll work from there.
Yeah.
And the only thing we're worried about is that we're half the year done, and now we're expecting Andy to make all these achievements in 6 months, and if he doesn't,
the time
we're
is
going
running
to,
out.
I know.
Well, we can also take a close look at what we're going to do there too.
But so I think as a board and administration together, we can figure out where the whole district is going, how we're going to get there, what we're going to do with that. So.
All right, that's all I have for today.
That's all you got.
You got one point of old business or new business
in this meeting?
Yeah. I just wanted a quick question: is there a standard for refusal that board members should recuse themselves of something? I know we talked about a conflict of interest. Is there a standard?
I think there is in Robert's Rules of Order, if I'm not mistaken. You can't.
I'd have to look it up.
Yeah.
But you want to, I can look for it.
Can we refer to Robert's Rules on that?
We've always just left it up to the board member to decide whether I should be in this or not, but we can definitely look it up in Robert's Rules.
Because
I know where you're looking at with this.
Yeah, because I always want to make sure that the right thing is always done for the right reasons, and it's something that can be repeated down the road, and it's not just a
it generally has been repeated. People just, they exit out of it. If they feel it's going to be a conflict of interest, they're like, nope, I'm not touching that.
Well, there's a difference between a conflict of interest and a recusal because of
Yep.
I'll
look at
do the right thing.
Thank you, Tom.
Oh, absolutely. I know you do.
Yeah, I'll look at it. I'll look at
right.
My Robert Tools book.
I've got one, too. I can look up then.
There you go. It's
like that. Next, we'll call each other.
Okay.
Consult with each other.
There we go. All right. So that brings us to, we have another business, correct?
Nope.
All right. So that concludes our agenda. Can I get a motion for an adjournment?
Motion for adjournment.
Can I get support?
Board.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. The Monroe Public School Board Work of Education, December 5th, 2020.